I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I appreciate you joining me every day from 9 to 11 o'clock. This is where you will find a safe space, a refuge for you independent thinkers out there, people not beholden to any party or any politician. Lots to get to today. I've kind of had another weird day. I'm kind of trying to duck and weave around some of the main news stories, and you just can't do it when it comes to COVID stuff. I mean, I just need help. This show to me is some level of kind of talk therapy. You know, one of the reasons it's good to have a friend to talk to sometimes, particularly when you're going through tough times. It's not so much to whine and complain. It's sometimes when you say things out loud, they make more sense to you. You hear them rather than being trapped in your head and just having thoughts, and they can get kind of muddied and muddled. Sometimes when you talk to somebody, you say something out loud and it strikes you a different way and you come to some level of conclusion. And I think the show is speaking to my friends out there is really some level of talk therapy to me. I think we all must need it. I've noticed, you know, when I look at news stories, I pretty much look at comments. I like to kind of get, I would say, the pulse of what people think about a topic. And it's always kind of funny because I go to conservative sites and liberal sites and everybody's in their little bubbles. And it's largely pretty predictable. But there are some news sources where there's some more objective and thoughtful people that I enjoy getting their thing. But I've noticed that the number of comments on stories has even increased over the last 3 to 4 years, particularly in the age of Donald Trump. Everybody's kind of hyped up, particularly on political and current events stuff. And I guess that's because we all want to be heard. So anyway, we'll parse through some of this stuff today. And maybe at some point I'll say something, I'll hear myself say it, and I'll finally understand it because the news just gets crazier and crazier. I ran across this yesterday. This is from the UK, and I cannot make heads or tails of this. Pubs may have to be closed in order for schools to stay open during local surges of coronavirus cases, Downing Street has hinted today. Again, this is in England. There were, however, some hints that schools may be prioritized over pubs in this scenario. Professor Graham Medley, who chairs the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies subgroup on pandemic modeling, I will say, aren't the models, isn't England where we got our original model, was it an Oxford study? What was that guy's name? Andrew something. I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. He was the one that originally came out and expected in the United States, I think, 2.5 million deaths. Anyway, this group on modeling is still busy at it. I guess past failures are not anything they're held accountable to. They said that pubs may have to shut their doors to reduce the risk of COVID-19 transmission and allow schools to remain open. See, this is one of those situations. I say it out loud. I guess what they're trying to say is that pubs may transmit it and the parents from the pubs come home and possibly pass this on to the children so the children take it to school. I guess that's somehow the twisted logic. When I first read this, I thought, what in the world does one have to do with another? Pubs may have to be closed in order for schools to stay open. This didn't really seem to make much sense to me, but I guess that is their twisted logic. I'm going to blast through some of this COVID news real quick. I'll go ahead and knock all these things out. I thought this was interesting. COVID-19 survivors suffer higher rates of psychiatric disorders, including post-traumatic stress, that's PTSD, anxiety, insomnia, and depression, according to a study conducted by San Rafael Hospital in Milan on Monday. The survey showed that more than half of the 402 patients monitored after being treated for the virus experienced at least one of these disorders in proportion to the severity of the inflammation during the disease. I don't think you have to even test positive or contract COVID-19 at this point in order to have triggered PTSD, anxiety, insomnia, and depression. The reaction, the reaction that they have taken towards COVID-19 is causing the vast majority of us to have PTSD, anxiety, insomnia, and depression. Those people who have lost their jobs are probably suffering from PTSD, anxiety, insomnia, and depression. The people whose businesses have been bankrupted are probably experiencing PTSD, anxiety, insomnia, and depression. The people who have been arrested for cutting hair or opening their gym are probably suffering from PTSD, anxiety, insomnia, and depression. The half of people who said that they were experiencing these things who had had COVID, I think it probably has absolutely nothing to do with the disease and everything to do with the world we are living in, the world we've created in response to this dang virus. But not to fear, apparently. If there is widespread PTSD, anxiety, insomnia, and depression, they've got a solution for it. Is it reopening and allowing people to go about their lives, to interact with other human beings, to be able to see a smile when you walk through a store? No. All of the authoritarian regime policies will remain in place. So in order to address the depression, we have another idea here. Johnson & Johnson, Spravato. Johnson & Johnson Spravato has been approved as the first antidepressant for actively suicidal people as doctors are becoming increasingly concerned about COVID-19's effects on the mental health of Americans. Now, it gets down in here. They're gonna admit to this in just a second. The FDA approval means the quick-acting nasal spray will be available to people with suicidal thoughts and a plan to put them into action, says Michelle Kramer, vice president of J&J's U.S. Neurosciences Medical Affairs Unit. That constitutes 11 to 12% of as many as 17 million Americans who have major depressive disorder. And let me see where they come through here and actually explain what they're really concerned about this suicide spike. Part of the thinking behind the decision was that Spravato's ability to act quickly could mean it works differently than older antidepressants that could take weeks to kick in. America had been in the throes of a suicide crisis even before the pandemic, with the rate rising 30% from 99 to 2016. And here it comes. Here's the kicker right here. COVID-19 closures limited the number of people given the spray as a depression treatment in person at specified centers. Ultimately, though, the numbers improved as patients and centers adapted and concerns grew within the mental health community that physical distancing and social isolation of quarantine may exacerbate people's existing problems or introduce new ones. So here we go. We actually have enacted policies that they are looking at. They are predicting that we will see more suicides based on the overreaction to COVID-19 and all the lockdowns. Again, they said, ultimately, though, the numbers improved as patients and centers adapted and concerns grew within the mental health community that physical distancing and social isolation of quarantine may exacerbate people's existing problems, meaning depression and suicidal thoughts, or introduce new depression or suicidal thoughts. And so, once again, instead of addressing the root cause of the suicidal thoughts, of the depression, of the PTSD, the anxiety, the insomnia, and the depression, which is robbing people of their interconnectivity as human beings. I saw a story yesterday about a woman who had given birth to a child. Very premature. Now, here is where I will praise the American medical system and medical advancements. They gave birth to a child 4 months premature, weighed 1.5 pounds. I would say probably as early as 20 years ago, that child would not have made it. And they've done such amazing things with taking children born prematurely and nursing them to a healthy state. It is truly amazing. That is where the medical system really, really shines, things like that and surgeries. But the story was about this woman who had this premature child, and so it was in the NICU, the neonatal intensive care, for a period of 4 months, and they were very concerned that the child was not even seeing the parent's face because of the mask, and so they created a mask for them that was clear around the mouth so that when the parents were interacting with this very, very premature newborn, that the child would actually begin to see their facial expressions. I think that's kind of illustrative of one of the problems we're probably seeing in society right now. I think that we need to see smiles. We need to get cues from other people in society. I think this diapering of our faces has got its own unintended consequences, much like the rest of the things that are associated with the economic situation we have and the lack of comfort of loved ones. The separation of older people in these nursing homes, while it may be one of the more appropriate steps because they are the more vulnerable amongst us, I've heard stories and have friends experiencing things where they just can't. These elderly people are trapped in these nursing homes and unable to interact with their loved ones at a time, and they're for an extended period of time. And, you know, mental health can be challenging for a lot of the very elderly anyway, and this certainly is not helping. It's a tragic, tragic situation. Anyway, instead of addressing any of the root causes of any of these problems, instead we do what we always do. They rapidly approved a drug for it. And so the pharmaceutical companies will find a way to profit off of this instead of actually letting us go live our lives to our best judgment and accepting the risk of walking out the door. No, they will send you just out a nasal spray. You lost your job. You got divorced. I actually heard Chukwuma Lumumba, the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, yesterday, explaining the spike in violence in Jackson. Did you see this interview? And he attributed it to, he said, the spike in violence that we are seeing in Jackson right now is mostly domestic. And the reason for this new spike in domestic violence in Jackson is the fact that people have been quarantined and forced to spend more time with each other than they normally spend. Another admission, another unintended consequence of absolutely horrible public policy when it comes to this disease that is survived by, what is it, 99.7% of people survive the coronavirus, even if infected with it, and we have unleashed waves of depression, anxiety, insomnia, suicide, and domestic violence. I don't know what to add to that. I got to take a break. I'll be right back.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. So somebody has an idea. Did you see this on Sunday? I'm sorry. I don't want to do this 2 days in a row, but I'm trying to explain to people. I wish I had good Federal Reserve jokes. If anybody knows any good jokes about the Federal Reserve, I mean, maybe that would help kind of, you know, lighten up the segment, make people kind of interested in the Federal Reserve. One of the Federal Reserve guys, and I talked about this at length yesterday, people need to understand that the Federal Reserve, that system, a central bank, one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, is behind so many of the problems. It's behind the wealth inequality in this country. It's behind so many bad things.
and people need to understand it. Well, maybe you can understand this. This is Neil Kashkari was on Face the Nation on Sunday. Now, here's my theory on COVID. The truth of the matter is, I have no earthly idea how this thing came about. My best suspicions is the Wuhan lab seems to make some sense. I don't know if China deliberately infected us and the rest of the world for a reason. Kind of seems like a scattershot approach to foreign attack. But the Chinese are pretty evil people. But my suspicion is if I were to implicate somebody, what I've noticed, the biggest beneficiaries, and there's many of them, pharmaceutical companies are doing very well. Kodak, this whole COVID thing may be all because of the CEO of Kodak. I mean, as far as my calculations go, he made $200 million in a day. I mean, this guy may have gone over to Wuhan, you know, put on the black ski mask, the black jumpsuit, nosed around in the Wuhan lab, and somehow figured out that if he let this thing leak out, that he would end up getting $200 million in a single day of stock options because he knocked the cover off the ball. But I believe that the financial elite are the ones who wanted this because their system was crumbling. Nobody noticed it. I was the only person on air talking about the fact that as of last September, there were big warning signs in the financial markets, and they were injecting these tens of billions of dollars every single night into the overnight markets that they don't normally do. It's an emergency measure, and they were doing it month after month after month. I mean, it's pretty much a permanent program now. And so my suspicion was, well, if they convince us to lock down, we might not notice that they're bailing themselves out. And sure as heck, that's exactly what happened. Well, here's Neil Kashkari. He is on the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Board. And here's what he's prescribing to get us back to a more robust economy. Now, remember, the Federal Reserve, they're always asked about the economy. I mean, this guy from Face the Nation on CBS is certainly showing him a tremendous amount of deference. You know, these are the masters of the universe, the guys responsible for the American economy. I would say they have botched it horribly for 100 years, but particularly the last 12 years, it's just been an abomination what they have built here. But anyway, so this is one of the head guys. I mean, you may never have heard of Neil Kashkari. He looks like some kind of a Bond villain. His name, Kashkari. I think it's Kashkari, but Kashkari, he was very instrumental in the bailouts in the TARP program back in the 2008 crisis. He was kind of one of the faces of bailing out Wall Street. Well, he's still slithering around. He's at the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis, and here's what he has to say about how we should get back to a more robust economy.
Well, you're right. It's really the virus and our ability to control the virus, either through clamping back down, getting the case count down so that we can test and trace and keep this thing under control, or eventually getting a vaccine or a robust therapy. That's the only way we're really going to have a real robust economic recovery. Otherwise, we're going to have flare-ups, lockdowns, and a very halting recovery with many more job losses and many more bankruptcies for an extended period of time, unfortunately.
What's funny to me in all of these discussions, there's never the other alternative, which is we could just let people live their lives. Everybody knows the deal now. I always think about if I go into any place and someone says, you have to wear a mask, if I'm not wearing a mask, what I need to remember to say. See, I'm not ever going to yell at anybody because it's, you know, some hourly employee. They don't want to be hassling somebody about a mask. Their boss is making them do it, and corporate's probably making the store do it, so I'm not going to hassle these people. But it would be funny if they say, you have to have a mask on. I should say, why? And they'll say, because of the virus. And I'll go, what virus? Is there anybody in this country left that doesn't understand what the deal is? But see, they never give you the other alternative, because this is an actual alternative. Ask Sweden. The other alternative is just let us live our lives. See, what they say is, you know, they give you the two things. Either we keep doing what we're doing right now and we just start and stop and open and close and start and stop and open and close. Or, and Neil Kashkari just told you, or we clamp down really hard. And he's gonna flesh out that idea in just a second here on this clip. Or we clamp down really hard now and then reopen and everything will be fine then. Of course, this is what they told us back in March and April, that if we just did, you know, 2 weeks, I think it was 15 days. Wasn't it 15 days to flatten the curve? Wasn't that the original marketing of this whole thing? 15 days to flatten the curve. And everybody went, oh, okay, we can make 15 days. It's like some kind of a bad movie. Fast forward 4 months. Anyway, but so their thing is we either clamp down really hard now, get this thing under control, or we go back and forth, back and forth. There's a third option. Sweden has been very successful with it, and it is called let people get on with their lives. That's actually an option that nobody is willing to explore. I've got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
Yeah, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Doing fine. It's like it is hard to make sense of this whole virus and their reaction to it because there's so many double standards involved. The only way that you can really understand it is peel back the layers of the onion and see who's behind it. I mean, you know, you look at it like, you know, going to church, you know, causes the virus, but going out and burning down your neighborhood doesn't.
Right.
You can't, you know, if you have a funeral for your mother or a wedding for your son, you know, you can only have immediate family members. But if you want to have a memorial to John Conyers, you know, you could pack the churches out.
Right. Yeah, you can't cut somebody's hair, but you can go to a Lowe's and get assistance from one of their team members to walk you around the store and show you everything in a crowded Lowe's store. I mean, yeah.
But now, you know, now they're saying, okay, now we're opening everything back up, but you've got to wear a mask, you got to do this, you got to do that. And to me, it's all being set up for the virus, I mean, for the vaccine.
Yeah, it feels that way. I mean, did you hear I was reading this? They say only about 30% of the people right now are really excited about this vaccine and will take it immediately. I thought that was pretty low. I would have thought it had been 75% or higher, to be honest with you, but maybe that's not going to work out well. But it does feel like this is definitely a setup for it.
I mean, they're holding us hostage, and they said, you know, we're not going to let your lives get really, really, really back to normal until you've taken the vaccine and the pinprick ink mark or the COVID pass on your phone or something like that.
Right.
And it's also a way that they're going to make tons of money here because you've got, you know, you've got the doctors. I'm sure you saw the doctors in the white coats that came out and said, look, you know, the oxychloroquine with the Z-Max and the zinc cures this thing. And even if you take it earlier, it's a great preventative. But, you know, the powers that be don't stand to make a whole lot of money off of that.
Yeah, they are not down with that.
They got to shut those people down.
Well, I'll tell you, there's even a sub-hydroxychloroquine movement out there, too, that I'll just mention. Quercetin, which is a natural substance with none of the side effects. I mean, hydroxychloroquine is a pharmaceutical. I certainly believe people should have access to it. It sounds like a lot of doctors are using it. They say quercetin with zinc is very effective against COVID, too, and there's absolutely no risk to that. It's just a naturally occurring compound. So, anyway, it's another thing that they won't talk about.
Exactly. So, us out on the ground, it's kind of hard to make sense of it because, you know, we're trying to look for patterns and we're trying to use our common sense in the matter. But, you know, like you say, you've got to peel the layers of the onion back to see who's the man behind the curtain to understand any of this.
Well, there appear to be a whole lot of different people who are benefiting wildly from this thing. I mean, whether it is the, you know, whether it's Jeff Bezos, whether it's the vaccine makers, whether it is Wall Street, whether it is the rest of the people that are, you know, the hedge funds who lined up for millions of dollars of PPP loans. I mean, there's just so many people who are truly benefiting from this thing while we see 50 million people laid off. Now, many of them have gone back to work. But, I mean, 50 million people had to lose their jobs. And when you look at the people who benefit and who stand to benefit going forward, it is a list that should arouse some suspicion.
And there is the answer, is follow the money.
Yeah.
And that's always the case. Follow the money, see who stands to benefit, and you'll understand what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, and common sense is very difficult. You almost got to suspend common sense in this to try to figure it out, and that's always a difficult thing for people who actually think for themselves.
But being you as an independent thinker, and in a world of people who don't think for themselves, it's extremely frustrating on me to see so many people mandating these masks when even some of the ones that they're mandating absolutely have no protection whatsoever and have ill side effects.
Yeah, right, so, right.
You know, so they're basically mandating something that's not going to help you with the virus but actually going to harm you in other ways. And you know, you go to, like, you know, I went out yesterday, 95% is wearing their mask and being good, obedient little slaves. Only maybe 5% are questioning the narrative, and that's frustrating.
Well, I think one of the things about the mask that is difficult, even for me, is that it makes visual sense to people that this stops the spread. We really can't, if we're not scientists, if we haven't studied virology or biology, any of these things. It just feels like, you know, it's pretty easy to grasp onto. If somebody sneezes and you have something covering your mouth, that would seem to help. We don't understand, you know, the size of a virus particle. We don't understand the transmission. We don't understand the fact that if you do have COVID, that you're expelling it into a mask and breathing it back in, actually increasing your own viral load. I mean, there are unintended consequences of masks. But I kind of get where people, you know, you just feel like, well, it makes sense. If you go to a hospital and you see a surgeon walking around, he's got a mask on. He must think it's for a reason. You know what I mean? This is a very easy one for people to not think deeply about, because it seems to make some common sense, even to me. But one of the best things I heard, comparisons I heard, and I think it was a medical professional, he said, look, this virus is so small, wearing a mask is like trying to avoid gunfire by wrapping yourself in chain link fence.
Yeah, I can understand that, but yeah, that's just my little two cents, and I don't know that it makes any difference. I'm just one of the frustrated masses out there, and like I said, it's good to for us to bounce these ideas and at least these thoughts off each other. If nothing else, it makes us feel like, you know,
we're not alone.
Yeah, we're not alone. That's right. Well, keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks so much. All right, I got to run to a quick break. I'll come back. I want to tell you, I'm going to play this guy's clip. You know, again, this is the money class. These are the masters of the universe, the Federal Reserve. He's got an idea to how to get us through COVID and get our economy back on track.
Mike Madison here. Have you heard about Lee Garland's latest offer? You know, he is the real estate agent with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance who will guarantee the sale of your home. Well, he's up the ante once again, and not only will he guarantee the sale, but he wants the opportunity to offer you cash before you ever even place it on the market. That's right. Lee Garland with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance is and represents cash buyers who are willing to buy your home as is today. Can you imagine not having to jump through a bunch of hoops, not having to scramble around to meet the buyer's needs, and not having to do repairs for some crazy home inspection? If so, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424 for more details on his cash offer and or guaranteed sale. Again, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130, 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much. You tell me that you love me so.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Phone number here, 601-879-0002. COVID's difficult to talk about. I want COVID to be over. You know, for the health and safety of everybody and to let all the kids go back to school, but probably primarily so I don't have to talk about it on this radio show anymore. This is like Russiagate to me. Just endless talking. If you get into kind of natural health stuff like I do, and you know that if you listen to my Wednesday shows, I struggle with a minimization of anything that I talk about to anybody because I don't wear a white coat. I'm not a doctor. Who's going to take nutritional or health advice from some guy who got a communications degree from Mississippi State? You know, nobody cares. And I get that. I really do. And that's why I try on this show to bring you studies when I do my health topic or bring doctors on or play clips from doctors to tell you what the research is around natural health topics. It's really the same with coronavirus. If I tell somebody I don't think the masks are useful, I don't expect anybody to really listen to me, to be honest with you. If somebody believes the masks are useful, what does some talk radio show host know about masks? This is why it's so courageous when you see people like the America's frontline doctors come out and do their thing, whether you agree with them or not. As I say, I believe that is kind of a public health policy second opinion. And the whole medical system is based on always getting a second opinion. It's well It's a practice in the medical field. Get a second opinion. So why, having some other doctors give an alternative view on health policy, why that's not just considered a responsible second opinion, I don't know. They don't seem to want us to know these things. But that's why I don't get into many of these arguments with people on masks, because you're just not going to get anywhere unless you are a doctor. I mean, if you're a doctor out there and you think the masks are harming people, and some doctors do, you've got some standing. To the rest of us out there, I got to tell you, you kind of got to give up that battle. I got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I sure am, and I'm kind of with Sweden myself, like you are. But as you're talking about the frontline doctors, I think one of the quickest ways to kind of bring this thing to a head start going down with all this talk and selective killing of businesses and closing the churches and the schools is to take these frontline doctors like Fauci, and here in Mississippi, I believe his name is Burks or something. And
Dobbs, I think.
Dobbs, there you go, him. And then the governors and the mayors that are wanting to shut stuff down selectively, is to just discontinue their pay for a while.
Right.
And let them have a little skin in the game, and I think we'll start seeing a different narrative pretty quick.
Absolutely. That's a fantastic point. I've said that before. Everybody that you listen to, and I'm going to finish up with this guy from the Minneapolis Fed. He's got a prescription to protect us. Yeah, you're right. Every one of them that you hear, I don't think I've seen one person who's had any sacrifice. As a matter of fact, people like Fauci or any of these people, they get more power, they get more attention, they haven't missed a paycheck. The budgets to their departments are going to go up. I mean, they are living the life of Riley. And that's my problem with them, too. Do they really not understand the suffering of people whose businesses are going bankrupt? Do they not understand the suffering of people that are about to be evicted from their apartments and their homes? Do they not understand the foreclosure depression that's coming? Do they not understand the increase in suicide that even the pharmaceutical companies are admitting is coming down the pike? I mean, do they not understand those things? Or they're just so myopic in their, air quotes here in the studio, science, that they just don't care, can't see it?
Well, like I say, they don't have skin in the game yet. They haven't missed a paycheck. In fact, they're making, like you say, more money. So it's not affecting them right now. They
right.
come out and just tell the rest of us that we're supposed to blindly follow them. So,
yeah, see, you and I are in a risk-reward situation, right? I mean, every day we walk out of the house, I have to make a decision. God, I got to get on a couple of highways. I've got to drive. It may be raining. You know, I mean, every day we make choices on this stuff to maintain our, you know, our jobs and our way of life. These doctors, they're not doing any risk-reward. They just say it's all risk and there's no other counter-argument to it. I mean, they just don't care about the downside to the rest of us.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, he's so right. You know, you just have to understand. I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I doubt I've heard one single person who has called for lockdowns, who has called for business closures, who has called for curfews, any of these draconian measures they've had. I bet you there's not one person saying those things that has missed a paycheck. All these public health authorities, still fully employed. I mean, just about everybody across the board. Either that or they were already, I mean, matter of fact, I thought of an exception to that as I was saying that. Maybe some Hollywood types. Look, Hollywood's been put on its hind legs, put on its heels, right? They're not doing movies. But I don't hear a lot from the crews, you know, who are making $60,000 a year out in L.A. and their lives have been upended and over. But we do hear from the mega stars who have already got, you know, $25 million in the bank. They're okay taking a few months off and virtue signaling to everybody. They're going to be fine. So let me revise my statement. I don't think I've heard anybody who advocates for all of these lockdowns and this total upheaval in our economy here that isn't either currently drawing a paycheck or independently wealthy already, one of those two. I don't hear a lot of people in leadership positions. Now, there's some people also, some of the people who may really support the lockdowns on the, you know, down here on our level, you know, the little people. I mean, they're making an extra $600 a week. I mean, maybe they're not quite unbiased either. Anyway, it really depends on the side of the money thing you're on, how receptive you are to either lockdowns or lifting restrictions. I think probably comes all the way down to an economic issue. Anyway, I want to get to this to finish up. Well, let me go ahead and I'm going to do it right now. This is the finishing up this guy from the Minneapolis Federal Reserve. He's got an idea, and this is just to show you, you got to learn about the Federal Reserve. You have no idea the power that they have over your life every day.
There's no interest in the president. The president is not interested in locking things down again at all. In fact, he's pushing in the other direction. So if that's not going to happen, does that hurt the economy more? And are there losses that you can't recoup in a recovery that might happen during that period of time?
For sure. I mean, if we were to lock down really hard, I know I hate to even suggest it, people will be frustrated by it.
And again, to the caller's point just now, Neel Kashkari is not going to miss a paycheck. They're not going to close down the Minneapolis Federal Reserve office. This guy's wealthy. I can't remember what his background is, but he'll do just fine in any lockdown scenario.
But if we were to lock down hard for a month or 6 weeks, we could get the case count down so that our testing and our contact tracing was actually enough to control it. The way that it's happening in the Northeast right now, they had a rocky start, but they're doing a pretty good job right now.
A rocky start? Yeah, what, 28,000 people in New York City died? Or Cuomo? Yeah, I guess that's what you consider that a rocky start. Anyway, it is fascinating. So he's telling you. What he's advising, now he's not the policymaker. This is just some banker, essentially. A month to 6 weeks of real clampdown, serious shutdown. And he goes on at some length in the rest of the interview, I may or may not play it, where he starts talking about, you know, that's how to build a he's more concerned about that. He's if we do that, then we come back and everything will be great. But isn't that almost exactly what we did before? I mean, we're in reopening phase. We were shut down for a month, and we're right here where we are right now. And again, I mean, I don't know if this guy has seen Sweden's chart, their death chart. That took a little bit on the chin. They opted for some personal liberty in Sweden more than in the U.S., and most places in the U.S. anyway. Then they took a little bit of a hit up front. I mean, the thing went through there. They got a little bit increasing death, and now they're past it. They're moving on. Sweden may be the next economic superpower if the rest of the Western nations continue to lose their mind like they are. But another month to 6 weeks of total shutdown is what Neel Kashkari from the Federal Reserve is suggesting. And I got to tell you, if you look at the headlines and the hysteria and the comments by Burks and Fauci, it may not be off the table. It may be coming. I'll be right back. All night
with the king. Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
Well, I got a couple minutes left in this hour. I'm going to move on to some other stuff next hour. I always want to remind people of this, though. You know, a lot of conservatives look at this and they say, how in the world do people just give up their rights, their rights to open their business, the rights to cut hair, the rights to open their gym. I mean, those guys up in New Jersey that were arrested. I got to tell you, that Governor Phil Murphy, oh my gosh, how do people in New Jersey put up with that guy? He is just, you should just, the scoldings. You've got a governor who is an elected representative of the people saying things like, we're not going to put up with all of you, what did he call him yesterday? You knuckleheads out there. I mean, just all of this scold, talking down to the citizens of New Jersey like they're children. I mean, politicians kind of do that anyway, but oh, he's bad. But I do want to remind people, as you watch all these rights being stripped, you can, you know, no churches, all these other things. I want to remind people, this is what I saw when the Patriot Act came out. You know, I looked around at conservatives and I said, how do you give up all of your rights to privacy? Why would you let the government read all of your texts and your emails and track your locations and warrantless wiretaps and all that stuff? Why would you do that? It was fear, right? See, they made everybody fearful of terrorism back in 2001. Now, there was a big event that spurred this fear, but the government took the fear and they exploited it. and conservatives rolled over like well-behaved puppies and said, okay, we'll give you whatever tools you need. So when you see the left, particularly right now, and this is not exclusively partisan, but it is tracking along those lines. When you see the left and you say, how could you give up your rights to open your business or to go to church or to go to a concert or go let your kids go play outside? How could you give up those rights? I just will remind you, it's fear. It is an exploited fear. And they did it to conservatives when it came to the Patriot Act and to the war on terror. They made you scared. That means, hell, they've made us bankrupt our nation on military spending, all with this fear of terror. There's a terrorist behind every bush, and people still believe it. People still don't question the war on terror, the trillions of dollars that's been spent, the tens of thousands of U.S. troop lives that have been expended through either death or severe injury or suicide. Still nobody questions it, so I just kind of want to throw the mirror up there and say, hey, look, if we castigate one group for succumbing to fear, for allowing the fear-mongering on COVID-19 to change our entire society and destroy our economy, I say, well, we shouldn't have let the fear of terrorism either. Look, there's risk going outside. The world is not always a safe place, whether it's terrorism or a pandemic or a car accident or anything else. My whole basis of my whole argument is I don't judge anybody who wears a mask. If they think that's appropriate for them, that's fine. But I would just say, look, as far as the closures, the demands from these petty tyrants across the country, we're grown-ups here, most of us. And we are capable of making our own decisions. There's just so many ways, if you stop and think about what you do during your day to mitigate risk, knowing you're assuming some. I mean, if we just really want to be where there's just no risk, I got to tell you, you can't get into a slippery tub. Showers are out. That's extreme. Doesn't kill that many people, but it happens. So just remember this, because other things will come. There will be more things where they try to do more draconian things because they tell you that, you know, China's coming after you or whatever. And it's fine if you want to face off with China. I got to tell you, this trade war, I said from the beginning of the trade wars turn into shooting wars. This thing seems to be heading that way. We'll see. But don't let them strip you of a bunch of more of your rights based on China being the boogeyman or Iran being the boogeyman or any other group suddenly is a boogeyman, so they need to suspend all your rights. I mean, we've got people right now on the conservative side of things. I'm scratching my head. They want to see federal troops go into cities to quell domestic violence in Chicago. Why? Fear. The ability to get things done. We are not good guardians of our rights. I think the Founding Fathers would be truly ashamed across the board of just about everything we're doing right now. Be right back.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Phone number here, 601-879-0002. As an observer, as someone who is outside of the two-party system, watching the two parties scream at each other. I find teachable moments in the middle of it, and I try to bring them to both the right and the left. If there's people on that, there are people on the left who listen to this show. I've heard from some of them. I certainly know Kim Wade brings them in. They love to hate the man they love to hate, Kim Wade. He gets a lot of left-wing listeners. So when you see things, I'm going to kind of move on to a little bit more kind of economy-based things and kind of the things that the mistakes that we are making right now. I think it's valuable for people to kind of see them out ahead of them coming. It doesn't mean they stop. I've been talking about the Patriot Act. It's still in force. Congress cheers. Trump tweets. We re-upped the Patriot Act. A couple of weeks ago, Donald Trump sent out several things saying, we've reauthorized the National Defense Authorization Act. It was, you know, great job, Senate, something along those lines. This is the NDAA that has got in it now where they can detain an American citizen on suspicion of terrorism, which is, you know, a very vague term. They can detain you with no phone call, no attorney, and no charges indefinitely. And we got a Republican president that's cheering that repassed, and the American people, you know, we're not paying attention. It's all COVID, and it's all protest right now. But it's still chilling to know that our government has done that. Patriot Act, which unleashed a Soviet-style monitoring program on our people. Nobody pays attention. You know, when you see these restaurants and stuff closed down, I will tell you this, because I know there's a lot of people out there saying, who are these petty tyrants, these mayors, these bureaucrats, these health authorities that are just randomly telling business owners that just want to provide a service? I saw an interview last night with a guy at Iron Horse Grill, and the manager was rightly frustrated. He said, we're doing what we're supposed to do. We're at 50% occupancy. What? You're going to take us down to 25%? Is that going to do any more? Is that going to be any better? And he's dead on right. And I know a lot of people who were frustrated with the overreach of shutting down businesses, shutting down hair salons, and arresting gym owners, a lot of us go, what in the world is going on here? I'm going to hearken you back to another big thing that I would have called attention to had I been on air, and I certainly did in my private life. How about everybody who was all for stopping smoking in restaurants? Oh, well, Mike, that's different. Is it? Smoking is a legal activity. A business owner spends a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of effort to open up a restaurant or a bar. If they choose to offer either a section of smoking or smoking throughout, why is it anybody's business? Why is it a bureaucrat's business? Why is it your business? Now, it's your business if you don't want to go into a smoke-filled restaurant. And I got to tell you, it didn't used to bother me, but it probably would now. A lot of people can't stand being around cigarette smoke. You know, that's the beautiful thing about the free market. If you let it work, but most people won't let it work. We want microwave solutions. We can't wait for the free market. And a lot of conservatives out there, including a Republican city council member in Ridgeland that I communicated with at the time, they were all for clamping down, banning cigarette smoke in a restaurant. Now, a lot of you, I know what you're saying. Oh, that's different. See, everybody's got their little exceptions, right? That's different because I don't like cigarette smoke and cigarette smoke's unhealthy. Well, you've got a bunch of authoritarians right now telling you that COVID's unhealthy. And so they are saying that they get to close down restaurants or they get to dictate how many people they have or they get to dictate that they have to serve food with liquor. I mean, they're making up all these rules because they say, well, COVID's unhealthy. It's unhealthy for people to be around each other. It's unhealthy for people to not wear masks. Well, just not that long ago, a lot of people said, well, it's unhealthy to have cigarette smoking. So you need to ban every private business owner who wants to offer cigarette smoking in his establishment. If you had just waited for a second, there were already restaurants that were eliminating smoking in their restaurants. And they were becoming very popular because a lot of people don't like cigarette smoke. And that would have caught on. If one restaurant goes smoke-free and people say, I'm going there because I can't stand cigarette smoke, and they start doing well, you know what happens? Other businesses around look and go, oh, we're losing business to that smoke-free place. We're going to go smoke-free too. And then maybe a few, I know this is an abhorrent idea to anybody, maybe a few of the business owners would have gone, well, you know what? We're going to be the bar you can go to where you can smoke then. That'll be kind of our niche. They don't force their employees. I mean, the employees who walk in know they're working in a smoking establishment. probably isn't good for their health, but they're not forced to work there. The patrons are not forced to go there. See, it's a bunch of voluntary choices. Some people will say, hey, I can make a lot of money. Smokers tip better. I used to be in the bar business. I'll tell you right now. Smokers generally tip better. They used to. Now, I'm not any kind of an advocate for smoking, and I don't want to go into a smoke-filled restaurant either. Yeah, it makes your hair stink, makes your clothes stink. That's all fine and good. So I make the choice myself. But I don't pretend, or not even pretend, I don't want to take the government, whether it is state, federal, or local government, to beat a bar over the head and say, you can't allow smoking in here. The citizens have spoken. Well, how do you like it now? The citizens are speaking again, aren't they? The politicians are banning restaurants. They're banning church services. They're banning these things. Oh, because it's health, health, health. You see the hypocrisy there? And what's funny is I can almost hear people's minds going, yeah, but it's different. This is different, Mike. Everybody's got their little exceptions. Yeah, but it's different. We got Soviet-style monitoring, surveillance in this country. And why did people do it? Well, because of terror. But it's different now. We got to do something. It's this do something attitude. Oh, we got to do something. Everybody wants somebody to do something. Do something. One of the worst things I ever hear from people, and I was guilty of it too at some point. I wish Congress would just get together and get the work of the American people done. They need to come together. They need to be in bipartisan. They're a bunch of do-nothing Congress. Thank God. I say thank God they're a do-nothing Congress. Every time a politician makes a move, 99% of the time it's bad. But I just wanted to bring up that little teachable moment, because once you start letting the government in to dictate, to micromanage businesses, you've let them in. It's like a vampire. Isn't that the deal with vampires? Like I don't really know what the deal is. They don't seem particularly polite. But apparently, if a vampire comes to your door, if you don't invite them in, they can't come and get you. Something to keep in your, you know, if you didn't know that, it's a little piece of knowledge you should know. They hint around. They're very clever from the movies I've seen. You know, they kind of ask for an invitation, but you have to invite them in. That's like the government. And you asked the government to come in with the smoking bans, and you asked the federal government to come in with things like the Patriot Act, and I mean just all kinds of things. And if we had any level of consistency on there, and I'm appealing in this particular case to conservatives, and again to any of you who think that, you know, the smoking thing is an odd or misplaced example, I just say why. Why didn't you just choose to go somewhere else? Why did you have to use the government to beat a restaurant owner over the head and threaten him with arrest? You understand that restaurant owners in central Mississippi and pretty much nationwide now, a lot of them, they risk arrest or fining and fees and all kinds of things that will put them that will bankrupt them for allowing in their own privately owned establishment to allow a person to just voluntarily light up a cigarette. Whether it's good or bad for their health, look, I do a whole health show. I'm not sitting here encouraging smoking. I'm just saying, when you give these bureaucrats, these politicians, the power and you endorse it, then what do you expect? They feel like they are now masters of every damn thing we do. So keep that in mind going forward, because I've got some examples of some more things that are coming down the pike. I'll get to one in just a second. And unfortunately, trigger alert. Donald Trump said something yesterday that I was scratching my head. Maybe I don't understand it. Maybe you can help me decipher what he's talking about. This is about TikTok. Now, we'll talk a little bit about it, but it is the TikTok sale that is going on and what Trump said about it. And I think it is the beginning of a trend that sounds really, really horrible. You can, if I'm wrong, call in and explain. I'll be right back.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
did a lot of my show yesterday about the fact, pointing out socialism is here. I read a report that was just a jaw dropper to me, that a quarter of all income, I think it was in June, to the American people came from the government. One quarter, 25%. It's just, that's a stunning statistic. It may not sound, oh, well, it's just a quarter. I mean, that's socialism, man. People in socialist countries work and draw wages too, but they are on so many government benefits that becomes the government's in control. So here is something that some people might think is contradictory, because I support this. You know, I'm on the record as saying I support anybody who wants to practice socialism. I absolutely 100% support you, as long as it's voluntary. You want to get 100 people, all your guys, your graduating class from your high school, and you want to decide you're all going to pool your money together and you're going to take care of each other. Man, knock yourselves out. I think that's fantastico. I don't think it's going to work. I think you're going to have a lot of animosity in that crowd from anybody who's actually pulling the cart, that's bringing in the money that everybody else is benefiting from, and the few who decide that they're just going to sit at home because this is a pretty sweet deal. I don't put anything in. I take a bunch out. That's what socialism is. But I encourage you and certainly support any attempts at voluntary socialism. No government mandate. You can't force me into it. But if you want to do it, knock yourselves out. And the reason I bring it up, I saw this headline yesterday, Pittsburgh launches a guaranteed income program with Jack Dorsey money. Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto announced that his city is now participating in a program receiving funding from Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, in which eligible residents will receive $500 in monthly, quote, guaranteed income, unquote. The money used to start the program will come from funds Dorsey gave that is allowing Pittsburgh and 15 other cities to help those who are struggling during the economic crisis brought about by the coronavirus pandemic. Now, the suspicious word in that sentence is start, the money used to start the program. I don't doubt that Pittsburgh may try to take this up as a mantle, and then I would totally disagree with it. But a private citizen saying, hey, I want to give you a bunch of money you can just hand out to your citizens to give them a hand. Go and knock yourselves out. That's absolutely fine with me. I mean, I encourage people. I think all socialists should at least socialize their families for 2 years before demanding the rest of us live under socialism. And you report back to us how that worked out. You want to see a family at each other's throats. Have them all put their money into a big pot and take it out equally, or, you know, even the people who need it more get to take out even more anyway. Other free market busting stuff. Okay, this is something Donald Trump said yesterday about the sale of TikTok. And I need somebody to explain this to me. Now, first of all, trigger alert, because I'm going to really question Trump on this. I don't think this is a good thing at all, but I may be misunderstanding it, so I'm open to any interpretation that maybe I'm missing. I don't like the idea of banning TikTok from all American consumers, even if TikTok's a bad program. I don't know really if I decide to get on TikTok. My information has got to be, I've got apps on my phone. I already know my privacy and all of my information is floating around out there. I don't want the Chinese to have it, so I would probably be smart enough not to do TikTok, but I'm not sure with the national security threat. Now, I think the military should be told you don't get TikTok, because the military are employees of the government, right? But anyway, so I'm a little suspicious of this whole idea that by executive order, we're going to start banning things. Well, Trump didn't end up banning TikTok at all. He's given them until September 15th to come up with the deal. The idea is that Microsoft may now step up and buy them. I've just seen a headline that maybe Apple is going to buy them. This is a little bit of kind of gangster capitalism to me, because essentially what it says is TikTok, what is their bargaining position right now? And you may hate TikTok. That's fine. That's fine. I got nothing for TikTok. I've never used it. I guess I've seen some videos secondhand or something, but I don't care about TikTok. I hate social media across the board pretty much. But what kind of bargaining position does that put a foreign company in when you say, oh, you're going to be out of business on September 15th anyway? I mean, you know, so if you're looking to buy TikTok, what day do you close the deal? September 14th at about 12:50? Because you basically just say, hey, look, I'm going to give you $10 for TikTok. You got 10 minutes. If you don't take it, it's worth nothing. I mean, it's a little bit of gangster negotiation stuff, but this was the concerning thing that I don't quite understand, but it sounds pretty bad for doing business in the United States for any foreign company, if this is our new approach to a foreign company who makes business in the United States when they decide to sell their company.
Too big, too invasive, and it can't be. And here's the deal. I don't mind if, whether it's Microsoft or somebody else, a big company, a secure company, very, very American company, buy it. It's probably easier to buy the whole thing than to buy 30% of it. Because I say, how do you do 30%? Who's going to get the name? The name is hot. The brand is hot. And who's going to get the name? How do you do that if it's owned by two different companies? So my personal opinion was you're probably better off buying the whole thing rather than buying 30% of it. I think buying 30% is complicated. And I suggested that he can go ahead. He can try. I set a date of around September 15th, at which point it's going to be out of business in the United States. But if somebody, and whether it's Microsoft or somebody else, buys it, that'll be interesting. I did say that if you buy it.
Here it comes. This is the part that seems very concerning to me, and if I'm misinterpreting it, I encourage somebody to explain to me what this means.
Whatever the price is that goes to whoever owns it, because I guess it's China, essentially, but more than anything else, I said a very substantial portion of that price is going to have to come into the Treasury of the United States.
What?
Because we're making it possible for this deal to happen. Right now, they don't have any rights unless we give it to them. So if we're going to give them the rights, then it has to come into this country. It's a little bit like the landlord-tenant. Without a lease, the tenant has nothing. So they pay what's called key money, or they pay something. But the United States should be reimbursed or should be paid a substantial amount of money, because without the United States, they don't have anything, at least having to do with the 30%. So I told him that. I think we're going to have maybe a deal is going to be made. It's a great asset. It's a great asset, but it's not a great asset in the United States unless they have the approval of the United States. So it'll close down on September 15th unless Microsoft or somebody else is able to buy it and work out a deal, an appropriate deal, so the Treasury of the, really the Treasury, I guess you would say, of the United States gets a lot of money. A lot of money. Okay?
Okay, am I interpreting this correctly? Now, set aside your hatred for the Chinese. I share a lot of your concerns with the Chinese and all that, too. But is he saying that if somebody, a foreign country, and you can say, well, this is just because it's China. This is TikTok is China state-owned. Okay, I mean, now that's what you say now, but I'm kind of basing my whole show around the slippery slope, the letting the camel's nose under the tent. You love to sic the bureaucrats on restaurant owners because they allowed smoking in their things. You would ask them to be shut down or arrested if they allowed somebody to smoke in their restaurants. But now you don't quite understand how the bureaucrats are just arbitrarily shutting restaurants down or dictating how many people can sit at their tables or how many tables they can have. So if I'm interpreting Donald Trump correctly, what he's saying is that TikTok can sell to Microsoft, but the money, let's just use a, you know, they've been talking about TikTok being valued, I think, at $50 billion. What are you people doing on TikTok that is generating a business worth $50 billion from a one-minute video? Isn't that what it is? Isn't that what TikTok is? It's one-minute videos. And from what I can tell, it's mostly people dancing or something or doing impressions. How does that generate $50 billion in revenue or value for the company? I don't know. But so let's just use that figure, since we're trying to be simple here. If Microsoft agrees to buy TikTok for $50 billion, and believe me, they won't. They won't have to, because now TikTok knows their company is worthless on September 15th. So this is really a giant win for Microsoft or whoever buys TikTok. And hint, it's not going to be a mom-and-pop shop. One of the globalist corporations, be it Microsoft or Apple or whoever buys it, just saved billions of dollars, because all they have to do is just draw out the negotiations to the September 15th deadline, and they have got TikTok over a barrel. TikTok will be lucky to get $1 billion for this thing. But if I get this right, what Trump's saying is you came in this country, you sold a product to a bunch of Americans, which is the TikTok app, and you made a bunch of money. And since you were selling your product in America and made a bunch of money, when Microsoft gives you the $50 billion for your company, you've got to give us half of that. Now, he didn't say half. He said a lot. He said the Treasury's going to get a lot of money for this deal. The Treasury should be, he said, reimbursed, but I don't think the Treasury actually paid for any of TikTok, did it? Essentially, he's saying the U.S. gets a cut of the sales of this thing. So if TikTok were able to sell to Microsoft for $50 billion, Donald Trump is saying that TikTok should have, or Microsoft should write a check to TikTok for what? $30 billion of that and $20 billion goes to the U.S. government? That sounds like a mafia tactic to me. What about IKEA? That's a Swedish company. They do a lot of business in the United States. Is the rule now that if IKEA decides to sell, then part of the money that they get for the sale of their business has to go to the U.S. Treasury because, hey, they made a lot of money off our markets? What about BMW? BMW sells a lot of cars here. If BMW sold out to Mercedes, they merged somehow, and would BMW have to give the Treasury? I mean, this sounds like a protection racket to me. It's like an extortion thing. What are we just going to come out and go, hey, BMW, we're kicking you out of the country January 1st. Now, if somebody wants to buy you, then you can keep selling BMWs in this country. But if somebody buys you, you got to give us a chunk of that money, or we're just going to shut you down across the board. Now, I know everybody, like I say, I keep talking about this. It's so funny to watch. Everybody's got their exceptions. Yeah, but Mike, this is China. You don't understand. No, I understand. And it's just, why is the U.S. government getting any money from the sale of TikTok? This does not typically happen. Do people know that? Now, they may have to pay some taxes on the proceeds for the sale if it's a net profit. But you just step in and go, uh-uh. Microsoft, you're paying TikTok $50 billion for their app. Just give them 30. Give the other 20 to us. What about Samsung? People got Samsung phones in the U.S. We got to be the biggest purchaser of Samsung televisions. If Samsung sells out to Sony because they've been doing a bunch of business in the United States, does Samsung have to give us a bunch of the money they get from their sale to Sony? You know what I'm saying? This just really struck me as very, very odd and very gangster. And I'm going to follow up with a story after this break that is even more gangsta. And again, if I'm misunderstanding this somehow, or if you think there's a justification for this, anything besides, don't just call me and go, yeah, but you don't understand, this is China. They've been using it to spy on Americans. Look, the NSA spies on Americans. I don't like that either. I'm sure Russia is noodling around in our stuff. I would imagine Paraguay has got hackers that are noodling around in bank apps right now as we speak. I mean, everybody is sloshing around in all this stuff. I don't like China. I wish China was a different kind of country. I don't want to go to war with them. But this is, you know, as I'm watching the remaking, and let me just tell you, let me go ahead and flesh this out a little bit to explain to you what the real danger of this is. If this sets a precedent that if you get your money from the United States and you try to just sell your business, we're going to step in the middle and grab a bunch of it. What do you think that does for availability of foreign products in the American market? Now, you may say, well, we want to make our stuff in America anyway. We should only be an American product. Well, that's fine. You've had a choice for the last 50 years to only buy American, did you? No. I don't know anybody who did. You need the government to force all foreign products out of our markets to force you to buy American? We can't figure it out ourselves? That's one of the things I can't stand about a lot of the talk about China, is that it's like, well, we all had an opportunity. Yes, China overtook us in manufacturing, but American manufacturers were begging us. They were begging us with commercials back in the 70s and 80s, please buy American. They'd show their factories. They'd show their employees. As industry after industry after industry was dying in the United States, they were begging us to buy American. And you know what most Americans did? They went, nah, it's all right. I'll go down to Walmart. It's cheaper there. We can't absolve ourselves of the responsibility. We're part of the reason the American manufacturing died, because we refused to support them. And now everybody says, oh, well, I'll support them now when the government forces me to, essentially by you know, shutting down any imports, and we're going to make American, you know, make American. I'd love to see American products made again, but I'd like the choice to be able to support American manufacturers, not to be forced by the government. But it seems we can't do anything anymore. You know, we can't go back to my example, the cigarette smoking in a restaurant. We can't just choose to go to a restaurant that doesn't allow cigarette smoking and just enjoy ourselves and let everybody else have their own freedom to do what they want to do. We have to get the government to shut down restaurants that smoke. It's like we're helpless without government. We got all these great ideas, all these great intentions of what we want to do. We want to buy American, but we're not going to until the government mandates it. We want to go to non-smoking restaurants, but we're not going to do it until the government shuts down all the smoking restaurants. It's like we're all waiting for the government to act. Please do something. Bipartisan. Please get stuff done in Congress. We need to be told what to do. It's becoming a level of gangsterism in this country. I'm not anti-American. Knock that stuff off. Grow up. I want the country to be a free marketplace like it's supposed to be. That's why it's so great. You do understand that, right? I mean, the reason the United States had such an ascendancy and had such a burgeoning middle class and such a great standard of living, something the world had never seen, was all about freedom and free markets. That's what built us, not the government deciding what restaurants can be open or closed, deciding taking a piece out of a transaction between two parties, a business transaction. We're turning into a gangsterism. And if you don't believe me, wait till the story I come back and tell you. I saw this coming a mile away. I talked about it when it started, and it looks like it is finally coming to the culmination of exactly what I said. It's American gangsterism that is not making you and I safer. And when I tell you this story, I'll be very interested to see if you can find one possible way that your life is improved by the transaction that just took place or was announced yesterday. I'll be right back.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I love the United States. Man, I'm so lucky I was born to be an American. I really do. Really do appreciate it. Just it was luck. I didn't earn it, you know. I was the right person in line when the souls were being doled out, and I found myself born an American citizen. It really has just been a fantastic country. I hate to see what we're allowing to happen to it. That's where I'm coming from. Whether it's domestically or foreign policy-wise, we have allowed our foreign policy to be hijacked by gangsters, man, thugs. I was really surprised, I got to say, when Donald Trump announced that they were taking the oil fields in Syria. I was not happy about that at the time. I thought that was really gross. It feels a lot like piracy to me. Now, there's all kinds of justifications out there. Now, you know, if China were to come over and take the West Texas oil fields, I doubt Americans would be very sympathetic to whatever rationale they gave for it. I'm sure the Chinese would go to their people and go, look, we have to protect the West Texas oil fields and take all their oil, because if we don't, then the U.S. is going to fuel their military machine and invade us. I don't know what they would say. They'd come up with some reason, right? But would you as an American stand by and watch the Chinese invade and take over the West Texas oil fields? I doubt it. I know a lot of people out there consider themselves patriots. You wouldn't allow the Chinese to step foot on American soil and take our natural resources. But somehow, the Trump administration and people like Mike Pompeo and John Bolton convinced conservatives that it's perfectly normal to go into a country and just steal their stuff. It's quite amazing that you can make that mental leap, not understand that you wouldn't allow it from another country here, but somehow our foreign policy team is granted some exceptional powers from above or something where they get to dictate, you know, like Trump took the Golan Heights from Syria. Just took Syrian land and gave it to Israel. half a world away, we just made the decision. Hey, country. Hey, Syria. You know that land you say is yours? It's not yours anymore. We're taking it. We're giving it to these guys over here. I don't know how that works. This came out about the Syrian oil stuff. I thought that was so gross, and I felt so bad. We've got 700 to 1,000 troops over there right now guarding Syrian oil fields. That's in hostile territory because, I don't know, Syria kind of feels like that's their oil. Because you know why? Because it is. Well, the deal has been done. Read this story that came out yesterday, and Mike Pompeo has confirmed this. The some 700 to perhaps 1,000 U.S. troops still occupying Syrian territory in the country's oil and gas-rich northeast are overseeing a deal for an American company to come in and take the oil. The American forces in Syria are overseeing a deal for Syrian oil. Can you even wrap your mind around the Chinese coming in and taking over West Texas oil fields and then announcing that they're selling those fields to a Chinese firm? And then this Chinese firm, what, just shows up and parks themselves right in the middle of West Texas? You don't think the Texans would get upset about that? You don't think Americans would get upset about that? Which means we're probably going to have to commit troops to protect. And they do not name, and I looked around, they wouldn't name the company that's taking this oil against Syria's will. Let's see what it is. Mike Pompeo made a comment on it. He said it was a very strong deal. What did he say here? A U.S. Senator and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had referred to an oil fields deal between the SDF, that's the Kurdish forces, and a U.S. firm during a Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing on Thursday. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said during the committee hearing that the SDF General Commander Abdi informed him that a deal had been signed with an American company to, quote, modernize the oil fields in northeastern Syria, and asked Pompeo whether the administration was supportive of it. This is the Trump administration, and Mike Pompeo responds, quote, we are. Mike Pompeo said, the deal took a little longer than we had hoped, and now we're in implementation. So you've got Trump on one hand saying that if they get a deal for TikTok, then the U.S. Treasury gets a VIG. We get a big chunk of that. We want a lot of that fresh cash for selling your company. And I think that's without precedent. I've never heard of that kind of thing before, and nobody's calling to explain that I'm wrong on that. It certainly sounds like we're just trying to get our beak wet. Isn't that what the mafia said in New York? Everybody's beak gets wet, Tony. America's just coming in and going, oh, you're selling your company? Well, we get a big chunk of it because you did a bunch of business in our country. It's kind of like the mafia who says, oh, you want to come do business in the Bronx? Well, you pay us. You pay us, you want to set up your business in the Bronx. We run the Bronx. And now we've got over in Syria, we go in, we fund a bunch of radical jihadists. Maybe I should stop saying we, because I have nothing to do with it. You have nothing to do with it. This is the psychopaths, neocon psychopaths in both the Republicans and the Democrats and State Department and CIA that have been doing this. They fund radical jihadists. ISIS. In Syria to topple the government. And when that doesn't work, they just go, okay, well then we're taking your oil. And this is a country we've laid waste to. I gotta stop doing that. It's a bad habit. It's not you and me. It's not you and me. It's the psychopaths running the show. They lay waste to Syria. They send millions of Syrians fleeing for their lives up into Europe. They destroy the place, and then I did it again. This is going to be a hard habit to break. And then they, foreign policy establishment, lays just layers and layers of sanctions on Syria to further strangle them economically. But the one saving grace of Syria, they think, well, at least we've got oil to sell. And then they, the psychopaths in our foreign policy establishment, say, oh, no, you don't. We're taking that too. I know a lot of very pious, very devout Christians in this country that I'd like maybe for them to explain to me how this is somehow moral. This feels like stealing. It feels like I say, gangsterish behavior. And now we have made a deal where an American oil company is going in and taking this oil that is in Syria. And let me just ask you, as I said, can you imagine a Chinese company buying West Texas oil out from under us by military force? Can you imagine that the Americans and the Texans, do you think they would put up with that, or do you think they would go and try to get those oil fields back? I mean, we're patriots, aren't we? I've seen Red Dawn. We would go and get those oil fields back. We would kick the Chinese company out of America, wouldn't we? And we should. Well, you think the Syrians aren't going to try to come after this American oil company that's in there stealing their oil? Who's going to protect them? Us. The taxpayer is going to fund the protection for this American oil field. And what are you going to get out of it? Have you gotten any of your checks from Iraqi oil? Have you gotten any of your checks for any of the Middle Eastern oil that has been profited on by American companies? Because I have never received my portion of that check. Now, when you pay your taxes, you fund the military that goes over there and helps these oil companies. But I don't know a single American that benefits at all from any of this stuff. But this American oil company will, and they're going to use our soldiers. They're going to use our soldiers to protect them over there because they're operating in hostile lands after having stolen the oil. I just shake my head again. I know I'm on an island here. I know I'm on an island here. A lot of people just want to support anything that the Trump administration does or anything that the, you know, any military operation is a good military operation because we're America. And it should be that way. We have such potential to be a force for good in this country, but we're hijacked by a bunch of psychopath neocons like Mike Pompeo and John Bolton. I'll be right back. All night
with the king. Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
I only got a couple minutes left in the show today. What's such a shame is that, man, capitalism worked so good for the United States for so long. Free markets, I mean, you know, there are countries in Europe and around the world that are just thousands of years old. And little upstart America, within a couple of hundred years, really within what, about 100 years, 150 years, man, we took off. We had this system where we kind of, it was like a shortcut. Hey, we're going to let everybody be free, and we're going to do free markets. We're going to get the government out of the way. We're going to do all these great things. And it worked. And now we're turning our back on it. When I talk about this foreign policy stuff, it's this gangster capitalism that we're trying to do now, where we used free market and, you know, trading and being friendly with other countries for a while. And now we've decided, oh, well, we're just going to print up a bunch of money to fight a bunch of wars, but our kids, the debt doesn't matter anymore. We're going to go bully people. I mean, this is what the foreign policy establishment does. I'm going to play this just because I've got a couple minutes left, and I found this. This was Donald Trump talking about taking the oil in the first place. Now, at first, they told us we were leaving troops in Syria to fight ISIS, right? It's all about terrorism. Same reason they got the Patriot Act and all of these wars. Terror, terror, terror. We're all going to die. First, it was about terrorism, but then Trump explains why we left troops in Syria. He's going to refer to a president. At the end of this clip, I'll tell you who the president is he's talking about in this clip.
I want to thank the president for the job they've done. Again, this has been thousands of years in the process between borders, between these countries and other countries that we're involved with 7,000 miles away.
That we're involved with 7,000 miles away. We didn't like being involved with them 7,000 miles away in 2016 when we voted for Donald Trump. He kind of told us we were going to stop being involved 7,000 miles away.
So we want to worry about our things. We're keeping the oil. We have the oil. The oil is secure. We left troops behind only for the oil.
Oh, and not for ISIS. Okay.
I have to just finish by saying that the president and I have been, we've been very good friends. We've been friends for a long time, almost from day one. And we understand each other's country. We understand where we're coming from. I understand the problems that they've had, including many people from Turkey being killed in the area that we're talking about. And he has to do something about that also. It's not a one-way street. So I just want to say it's a great honor to have you both, and thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
So there he is with Turkish President Erdogan. Now, Erdogan, I'll just tell you this real quick. I got enough time to flesh this out real quick. Yeah, Erdogan was the one buying the oil from ISIS for about 15, 16, 18 months, something like that. ISIS originally took the Syrian oil fields and was selling it to Turkey. Turkey was funding ISIS. Well, so was the United States, but, I mean, Turkey. So that's the great friend that was in the White House there. Turkey's also the place where they just turned a very, very old Christian church into a mosque. A lot of Christians seem to be upset about that, but he's in the Oval Office. See, it's these entanglements, getting involved with all these little dictators and tyrants around the world. Erdogan is pretty much a thug himself. I don't wish the people of Turkey any ill will. Actually, I have some friends from Turkey. But we're stealing the oil, and now we are giving it to an American company. Turkey will benefit. Erdogan and his family will benefit. Our soldiers will be sacrificed to defend this thing, either through deployments or through actual injury and death. You and I will see absolutely nothing. That is American foreign policy, doing the bidding of everybody except the American taxpayer. And this is gangster capitalism I cannot get behind. It has nothing to do with free markets, nothing to do with real capitalism. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.